for people who haven't heard of the Americans with Disabilities Act, what is it and how has it changed the lives of those with disabilities in the past 30 years?
So the ADA and Americans with Disabilities Act was signed in by President George Bush in 1990, and this really was kind of the culmination of decades-long, you know, protest and activism. It was, you know, a victory for the struggle of equity for people that have really been basically denied basic human rights. It's a civil rights movement, access to public spaces. It really kind of opened the door for just basic human decency, honestly.
And what did, I guess, the U.S., Alaska, Ketchikan particularly look like before the ADA, and how has it changed in the past 30 years since it was passed?
Our nation's disability history is daunting. You know, every single state has at some point enforced legalized segregation of people with disabilities. Disabled children were excluded from public schools. People with only minor disabling conditions were routinely kind of put in custodial institutions. States at one time prohibited marriage between people with disabilities and forced them to be sterilized. So you think about where we were and where we've come in 30 years, and we've come so far. But I think the biggest part of how far we've come has been the gain of dignity and self-worth for disabled persons. They are able to understand and recognize that they're a valued member of society. But we have still so much work to do with what that looks like and making sure society is accessible to them. So you look around and you see, you know, improved sidewalks, and you think about, you know, accessible transportation is becoming more the norm, but there's still so far that we have to go.
One thing I'm wondering is how, like, the landscape of Ketchikan and Southeast Alaska has changed.
But I think about what our island looks like, and it's built on a hillside. And you think about, you know, somebody in a power chair trying to get up the Jefferson, or, you know, trying to access sidewalks, or, you know, use a walker back when the streets were more wooden, and just the difference between that and now, you know, and even now we've widened our sidewalks, but really they're still not probably the most accessible for most people. So I think we've come a long way for that, but we definitely have a lot of work to do. Alaska in general has, you know, I think part of the biggest part, we're kind of known for our recreation and our outdoors and everything, but accessibility is kind of put as an afterthought. You know, we kind of build these things that'll work for everybody, but not really everybody. And then we think about, well, how can we make that accessible? And we try to build it into that. And that's really the framework that we kind of want to get around that thinking, is how can we make it, they call it universal design, how can we make it accessible for everybody right from the beginning?
What are the biggest challenges you think people with disabilities face, particularly in Alaska, like you were saying, particularly in Southeast Alaska, places like Ketchikan?
I think people with disabilities are the largest minority group in the United States, but for the most part, they remain invisible. And I think until they're seen, we're not going to see as much change as we want. We need more people with disabilities in the employment force. We need more people with disabilities serving on our city council and on our borough assembly and on our school board. We need to make sure that people see that this is a civil rights issue.
What do you want Ketchikan to look like in 5 years, 10 years, in terms of accessibility?
You know, we've really worked hard. One of the borough and the city both strategic plans was to have accessible on-demand transportation. And so SAIL partnered with a local vendor to have a local taxi vendor, and we leased two accessible taxis to them to be able to make sure that people can get around. And I think that in itself, I'm working with a person that wants to come to Ketchikan, and unfortunately our two accessible taxis are down. They both are out of commission, and we're working on funding to get those back on the road. But in the meantime, we don't have an option other than the existing already burdened things that we have. You know, we have paratransit, we have the bus. With COVID, that's made it a huge deal. So I'd like to see more options for people, not just with accessibility as far as, you know, wheelchair cabs and accessible options that way, but just more options for people in general. So I'm working with a gentleman that is coming to Ketchikan to go fishing, and trying to put together a way that he could be greeted like any visitor in our community, making sure he had transportation to his hotel, making sure he could access, you know, we talked about public transportation and what that looks like right now and what that might look like with him being in a chair. And just having that conversation just reminded me of how privileged we are to not have to think about those things when we want to go visit someplace. So I would like that not to be the exception, to have that conversation. I'd like it to be the norm, that this is just what our community is. We are accessible from the very time you get off that plane, boat, whatever. We are a welcoming and accessible community.
You mentioned COVID-19. Another thing I'm wondering is, how do you think Ketchikan and Southeast Alaska has been doing in terms of accessibility, you know, these past few months during the pandemic, and especially as, you know, everybody's having conversations now about what schools should look like in the fall and what that means for students with disabilities and things like that?
I've been actually a part of the conversation when it comes to special education and what that looks like for the school district here in Ketchikan. And I had reached out and asked if we could be a part of that conversation. And I'm comfortable with where our district is going. They're looking at, you know, it's an individualized education plan, and they're looking at each individual plan, meeting with the teachers, having those conversations. And so I do feel like, honestly, I feel like this is probably the first time that we're building a program around our children instead of expecting special education children to fit with the existing program. And I don't mean that to say that we don't have great special education programs already, but that we're looking at it from a different framework. So I think as far as technology and the, kind of where our community has been and accessibility, I think this has encouraged everybody to really think outside the box. You know, we've moved our organization, we moved all of our peer support groups. That's one of our core services here, and we moved all of our peer support groups to either an online platform or a teleconference platform and tried to figure out how that could work, and it opened it up. We didn't realize that it would unintentionally kind of be more beneficial. So instead of just being able to serve people in person here in Ketchikan, we have people that can Zoom in or call in from all over Southeast Alaska. And so it actually opened up areas there for behavioral health, for mental health supports, et cetera. And so I think that it's been a challenge. COVID-19 has been a challenge, but it's also been a challenge in that it's challenging the way we're thinking about how we do things and how creative we can be in those things. So I think that's been the only bonus.
With the pandemic and so much of life happening online now, how are we doing with technological access to people with disabilities in Ketchikan, Southeast Alaska?
I think we need to really make a pointed effort to make sure people understand their resources and what is available out there. This conversation just came up today with a friend of mine who is visually impaired, and she just received a new iPhone, for example. And the accessibility features have come so far on this new iPhone, and we had no idea. And this is what I'm supposed to do. And so just really understanding these resources and making sure they're available. You know, that was one of the conversations we had when we first started during COVID and the pandemic kind of first hit, was how do we help our seniors? Can we get them, you know, if they're going to be isolated, can we help them figure out technology on their phone? Can we help them figure out how to use FaceTime or Google Hangouts or one of those things? And I think just understanding our resources and accessibility features and really having conversations about them. You know, what does it look like on Zoom? Are the captions working okay? If they're not working okay, is it because you have an unstable internet connection and we're not allowing a person with a hearing impairment to participate in that meeting at that point? So really just thinking of it in that way.
Is there anything else that you think is important that hasn't come up?
You know, I think the one thing that we really try to encourage conversations is that in Alaska, not all of our buildings are fully accessible. And there's a common misconception when you question accessibility, there's a common misconception that people are grandfathered in or that there's too much financial obligation to make their building accessible. And as soon as you mention accessibility, people get defensive because it feels like you're, you know, almost like you're insulting the core of who they are, because everybody wants to make this world accessible. We all want to be inclusive. That's the type of communities we want to live in. But I think that we have to change the conversation to not be so defensive. And it can be as simple as, are your displays set up in your store in a way that somebody in a chair could maneuver them? Do you have trip hazards that somebody with a visual impairment might trip over a cord cover or something? And really just having those conversations, I think that's the most important part, is taking away the defensiveness of the conversation and understanding that ADA has to feel, it has to gain momentum, and it has to continue to have that momentum. And that's why I think the 30 years is so important right now, to kind of use this as a platform. but to have those conversations in a kind and respectful way and trying really to make our community more accessible is a conversation we should all be having. It can happen to any one of us at any time, and if we start from that ground up where we're accessible, then it's a lot easier to change.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you mentioned that there's a lot in Alaska and a lot in town that needs to be made more accessible, especially buildings. I'm wondering if there are particular places that come to mind as not being very accessible that you'd like to see as more accessible.
I can't think of any off the top of my head. I mean, we've heard comments from people over the years, and we've always gone and tried to work with an employer or such, and always been able to figure out a workaround. The one that I do think of is one that I know that they're actively working on, and that's our airport. You know, our ferry system, when you get off the airplane and have to, if you're not aware of our community, or even if you are aware of our community, you're not, if it's low tide, you're kind of in a different boat trying to get to that boat, so to speak. So I know that the borough is working actively on the terminal plan, and what that's going to look like to be more accessible. And that's probably the one that sticks out the most in my mind, is that's visitors and residents' first impression of Ketchikan. And the fact that that's going to be something that is fixed is amazing. And I know they're working really hard on making sure that's accessible, and I'm excited to see what that looks like.